But honestly, everyone has ideas, and ideas are cheap and plenty. You know, you can come up with 100 ideas in the next 10 minutes. And if your idea fails, then you're going to feel pretty shitty about yourself. And then, you know, you don't know what to do next because your idea failed. Instead of focusing on your idea or falling in love with your idea, and that's the pitfall, which is a lot of people fall in love with their ideas. Instead, you need to fall in love with the freaking problem.
Yes, you heard him. That's Niels, our guest for this episode, an innovation professional and a huge enthusiast. He talks about not only entrepreneurship in terms of businesses, but also in personal life. Here's a sneak peek.
Yeah. By taking everything from Lean Startup and saying, I'm going to build, measure, learn really quickly and build an MVP of the career that I want to go after and see if it works for me and take the data from there. And the data in that sense doesn't necessarily hardcore data. It could be your feeling. It is giving you energy.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a hell of an episode. And I have some very cool news for you at the very end. So tune in. Welcome to a new episode of My Generation with Ines. The podcast that challenges different perspectives on different topics and brings one that my generation would love to hear.
All right. So welcome everyone to this new episode of my podcast, My Generation with Ines. I am very happy this time to have with me a guest that was what we call an ISEC, a team leader at a certain point. When I was the president of ISEC in Tunisia, he was president of ISEC International. And his name is Neil Kasu. He was the president of ISEC International and led 125 members, countries and territories. And later on, he managed also and coached multiple teams between the sizes of 5 to 25 across local, national, and global level. This led him to travel and speak, host, and facilitate over 80 conferences across 40-plus countries. Niels has always been intrigued by the field of innovation and entrepreneurship and now spends his time learning more about these topics as he works towards impacting more people along the way. After his experience in ISEC International, Niels went on a corporate journey and innovation, which is very interesting. And that is why we're going to talk with him, talk about this innovation dilemma. Those who read the book maybe can know what I'm referencing to, but also corporate, non-corporate life, and all of that. We're going to dig deeper with Niels. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ines.
I'm happy to have you.
Very much. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to this and in catching up with you as we speak about, you know, the innovation dilemma.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to mention something. I remember Niels in his candidacy for president for ISEC International, like there was a catchphrase in his speech that I always say, even now I always use, like even like in a friend's context, like I say, it is what it is, it's the way you cope with it that makes a difference. That sticked with me, like since that election date, that sticks with me. And even the, like last year, especially 2020, like, so it became a catchphrase that I always say as well. So maybe we can start from there. Like, how do you resonate with that, especially like last year? It is what it is. It's just the way you cope with it that makes a difference.
It's crazy that you bring that up because, you know, over the last year, I think this is the most number of times I've heard people say it is what it is. And honestly, that's where it stops when most people talk about it, because they don't take the next sentence. The next sentence is, you know, the way you cope with it is what truly matters. And everyone stops at it is what it is and, you know, lets it go. Yeah. And there's no power in saying it is what it is, because at the end of the day, you want to be able to focus on the things that you can control and things that you can move and things that you can act towards. And regardless of the situation, you have the power to make the changes that you want to make around you and within you. And so, you know, the way you cope with it is what truly matters. And that is where the leader in you emerges.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I had also a conversation with a couple of my guests in the last episodes. Like we were talking also a bit, especially the last two episodes within the scope. And you, after finishing, like I want to go back after you finished your ISEC International, being a president in a global organization, you know, with that with what comes with that in terms of, you know, traveling, being young leader, etc., and then going to the real life, to the job market, and maybe not meeting your expectation in the job market, or like, oh, I'm like, I do some awesome things and I don't know, and you feel like maybe not misunderstood. How did you cope with that?
It's so important. You know, I feel like a lot of people that have gone through an intense experience, whether it's with ISEC or in any other context, as they move out of one intense experience, there is meaning and usefulness in figuring out how to close experiences, but also open up new experiences. And in between that journey, it is essentially this path of, you know, finding your peaks and climbing it up. But also realizing that once you've reached your peak, you know, in order to go to the next peak, it is in some ways walking down the valley and then going up to a higher peak. And so that journey of jumping from, you know, peak to peak, people tend to forget that in between peaks are also valleys. Mm-hmm. And most of the times, at least for me, I learned it the hard way because, from a, you know, one of a really high peak, I realized, okay, now we are on the way down. And on the way down is a lot of value, which is, you know, after you've seen the beautiful views of the peak, you're essentially on your way down and you're thinking about it. And most people spend a lot of time thinking about what they've just experienced. And, you know, and that's rightfully so, because you want to, you know, take a moment to really digest all of that, to let it be part of who you've become now after seeing a new way of being, a new reality, a new way of seeing yourself. But also not forgetting that you are no longer at that peak. You have moved on and you need to find now your next peak. And while you're figuring that out, the valley is also really beautiful. The valley is also really pretty. There's also a lot of amazing things in there for you to equip yourself with as you prepare for the next peak that you want to climb up. And so for me, that valley was very deep. That valley was full of, you know, reinventing who I am and breaking down everything I knew about Niels and recreating Niels in a new version, which was outside of the context of ISEC, outside of the context of what people knew me as, or, you know, what they came to see me for. And, you know, I had to spend a lot of time thinking about who I am now. After the experience, who am I now outside of ISEC? What are the values that I hold that are different from when I did while I was in the organization, and some that I still hold regardless of whether I was in and out? What are the new beliefs that, you know, make me who I am now and I choose to follow, and which ones are limiting beliefs that I no longer want to hold? Or what is the place from which I am operating from? And that is important. That was really important for me, because figuring out the small nuance of where I was operating from created a massive shift in the way I chose to operate moving forward. And the place that I was operating from for about a decade was, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. And so I did things, right? So it was not enough to be MCP. So I said, okay, I'm going to go to AI. It was not enough to be AI. So I went to PAI. It was not enough. So I went for my next big job. So that was always looking at it from a place of everything that I built was shallow and there was no foundation. And so I had to build something bigger versus moving from it's not enough to it's enough and. Mm-hmm. The enough and is where you're choosing to say everything that I've done is a foundation and I'm going to build on top of that and not neglect and, you know, throw away all the work that I've done to say, I now want to go to the next big thing because it's not enough. Yeah. Now I look at everything as, yeah, it's enough. And honestly, if I had to stop my life right now and, you know, I didn't progress at all from where I am at this point, it's still amazing.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you, like, did you found yourself in certain moments where in that reinvention process of yourself that is completely different from where you were operating for a decade? Did you find yourselves in a conflict that you're not really accepting the new shift and you're miss the old, let's say, Niels, or how people knew you? Like, did you find yourself in that conflict, and how did you cope with that?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because there was a lot of, in so many ways, the reinvention process is also a process of creating a new identity. And in the creation of identities where a lot of not so positive emotions lie, or, you know, feelings lie, which is a lot of shame and guilt and being able to truly become who you are. And a lot of people deal with that when there is a side of them that is so important to them, but others don't know about it. And they are afraid that someone might misidentify themselves as something that they might, they are not. So for me, the identity was global president, but I was more than that. I am more than that. And so the process of saying, what else do I want to, you know, show about myself to the world? That was it took me some time to build the courage around it. And, you know, one of those aspects was me, Niels, as a musician. People didn't see me as that, but I love, you know, music and theater. And those were things that I've always done, but never knew me in the context of Isaac. And so I had to refine those things that I cared about and, you know, follow them ruthlessly, regardless of what people thought or what they had to say about it. So in that process, which was about, you know, letting go of, you know, the thoughts that others might have about you and figuring out, you know, what are the thoughts that you have about yourself? Those are more important. Mm-hmm. So that's where I really spend most of my time, figuring out what are things that I'm really passionate about and I unapologetically want to be and pursue, regardless of what the, you know, the construct around me had to say. And so that was a lot of fun, honestly. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was part of, you know, in the valley, figuring out, yeah, what do I want to take with me along for this next journey? That also included, you know, choosing what my next job was going to be, where I wanted to spend most of my time. And I was pretty clear that coming out of a nonprofit for about a decade, I was moving from one side of the spectrum to the other side of the spectrum, which was to work in a corporate world, and not only a corporate world, in a bank, which is really the other side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And my reasons for that were really about saying, you know, in ISAC, or we always spoke about the corporations and the big organizations as the big bad players, and they need change, and we need to, you know, bring about some, you know, some change in the world. And I looked at that and said, okay, instead of talking about someone having to do those things, what if I had to be the person that had to do those things? And if I keep, you know, preaching about these things, I need to practice it as well. So I needed to go there and figure out for myself to find the evidence and the truth. And so I said, fine, I'm going to go, you know, I'll use this as an experiment for the next few years to validate or invalidate my assumptions about a corporate life and see what it has to, you know, what it looks like. And if I had to work in a corporation, I know for sure that the only thing that I want to do is to work in innovation.
All right.
Because that was, you know, key for me.
Yeah. I'll get deeper into your corporate experience in that. But before jumping, going back, I was going to ask you, so the musician, for example, came up in the reinvention process. I wanted to ask you, what do you, like, do you think that the reinvention process really stops because you say that you're trying to figure out what you like and your next job and what really sticks? But is there something that actually really sticks? Because maybe we have that first experience where we go through the valley, like you said, and then we acknowledge that there are many valleys. So it becomes like a normal to walk through the valley. So what do you think? Do you think that you reinvented yourself? You found what you want? Does anything really sticks? How do you deal with that uncertainty?
The answer is in the, you know, in the statement that it is in reinvention process, and a process never ends. A process is ongoing. The process will take you to different places, and you never stop reinventing yourself. Of course, there are moments in which you will deliberately do that. And I think every 10 years is a great chance to stop and say, who do I want to be in the next 10 years? But that doesn't mean it's not constantly ongoing, because you never know what's going to be thrown at you tomorrow that's going to make you come alive and just want to put everything you have into that and say, this is who I want to be now. And, you know, that's just part of the journey. That's just part of the process. So it's not a procedure. A procedure is a step-by-step guided thing that you will follow. A process is like, how a tree grows, and no tree grows the same as another tree, same as a human grows. No human grows the same way as another human. We all have our own individual processes, which are different. And, you know, that's essentially what it is. The answer is it's a process. It never stops.
And something you did very interesting is that, and this is how we connected, actually, you celebrate your 30 years and you posted on LinkedIn, like, I'm celebrating this time differently. And I'd like to catch up if you need or want to chat, etc. So I reach out to you and I said, oh, let's have this podcast, etc. So that was very interesting. And I wanted to ask about that milestone, what it meant for you. I remember when I was maybe 16, for me, 30 years old was like so big, and like you should have everything figured out by then. But now, like, I'm 26, it's like in 4 years, and I'm like, oh, I feel young as fuck, you know? So, so how was that milestone for you, especially for people that are listening? A lot of them are still in their 20s. So maybe some couple of pieces of advice.
Honestly, it's a milestone if you make it a milestone. At the end of the day, it's only a number. And 31 is as great of a milestone as 29. And 28 is as big of a milestone as 48. You know, I think we give value to things and then they shape us. So we give value to, 30. And then at 30, the concept of 30 starts shaping us and everything that we do. So first of all, it's not a milestone. It just happened to be my 30th birthday. And then, you know, looking at my 30th birthday, I look back and said, wow, over the last decade, I've done a lot of amazing, fun stuff. And I really enjoyed it. And I was in a process of figuring out some levels of stability for myself for the last couple of years. So I basically just put my head down after ISEC, focused on myself, did what I needed to do instead of constantly being of service to others. And, you know, just became selfish for a little bit in a good way. Because I needed that. And I just wanted to build roots over here in Amsterdam and just essentially figure out my shit. And now that I did that, you know, that was part of, like, you know, the basics, which is, okay, make some savings. Okay, buy a place. Okay, you know, find a good network that you really want to enjoy and you can grow with. To create meaningful relationships. All of those things that are actually really important to you. And now I find myself saying, every year for my birthday over the last few years, I always do something amazing for myself. And it's become a new sort of trend. So every year I try to do something for my birthday, you know, celebrate myself. And so this year I thought, you know, instead of doing it something only for myself, what can I do to give something to others? And the theme for the next few years that's emerging right now is expansion. Is how can I serve and share my gifts with more people from a place of love and light, so that there could be some sort of positive impact, because that concept is important to me. It's the billionaire concept, which is, you know, I want to be a billionaire, which is to be able to impact a billion lives positively in my lifetime. So keeping that as my North Star and, you know, looking at what I really am and a stand for transformation, which is my purpose. What could I be doing with giving these two thoughts to be able to reach out and help other people? So that was my intention, which is just reach out and see what happens. And the thought behind this is the feeling of giving. You know, the more you give, the more you have, and the more you have, the more you give. And this is what's going on right now, which is I put myself out there to say, oh, I'm here in a position to give now as much as I can. And, you know, and that's very different from the other way of people thinking about this, which is I need to take, you know, the, on the other side of giving is taking. And if you operate from that place, which is, you know, I'll take. Yeah, it's scarcity, right? It says, you know, the more I take, the less I have, the less I have, the more I take.
Yeah.
So you're operating from a place of scarcity instead of a place of abundance, which is the same thing that I mentioned earlier of never enough and enough, the same thing of soul and ego. So where are you operating from? Then choose to operate from a place of soul, a place of light, and a place of giving and abundance. And so that was the intention, to put it out there and say, okay, who else can I work with? And, you know, who are epic people that I'd love to do epic shit with? That's really where it came from.
Nice, nice. Cool. So after this, like, self-discovery, etc., and setting roots, we've talked about your journey in the corporate life. And there is this dilemma that I also had, very like skeptical about, okay, does working in corporate sector means that I'm going to kill my startup-y, agile-y, innovativity part of me? Yeah. So like there is always this dilemma that especially youngsters have when they go to the corporate world. And that's why many of them, they still like to stick to non-corporate and not have a jump, although they want to try it, but they're afraid of that. What are your takes on that? How was, maybe from your experience or what you worked with, because you worked in innovation in corporate sector, in a bank.
Yeah. I think there's nothing that could kill your innovative spirit, your mindset, your creativity. The only thing that can kill that for you is yourself. So it doesn't matter if you're working in a corporation, if you're working in a nonprofit, you could be working in the best startup you could possibly think of and feel like your innovation and your creativity has been killed. You know, just because you work in a startup or a nonprofit or any type of organization doesn't mean that you are now going to become a certain kind of person. And in fact, that was one of my biggest fears as well. It was the loss of identity, right? Because I see myself as someone who's creative, who's entrepreneurial, who's innovative, who wants to challenge the status quo. And I said, wow, I'm going into the status quo. And I might lose myself in the process. I might find myself wearing suits and ties and working like a corporate guy and becoming this sort of mold that I've seen around me. And that was my biggest fear. And so the whole journey was about, how do I stay true to myself while investigating my curiosities? And the way I did that was essentially to let the people around me, my managers, know exactly what they were getting when they were going to work with me. And luckily for me, I found myself a manager that truly understood that and let me just be. So it gave me the playing field to really just continue being the weird, creative, I don't know, random person I am, but as long as I was creating some value, right? So the work that I delivered was more valuable than, you know, the whole Niels wears a hat at work and that's weird. And no one else does that, but it's okay. So the thing that's really key here is to realize, and I think this is the reason why a lot of people are afraid of going into a corporate world or a job or a space where they might not necessarily feel like they might be able to be themselves, is that, and there's research about this, there's research that, you know, the number of people that were told that your job is fixed. And there were people that were told that your job is flexible. It can be adjusted and changed. And the happiness index that was seen in these two different groups of people were completely different. The ones that perceived their jobs as fixed were significantly less happier in themselves and in their jobs versus the ones that saw their job as flexible and changeable and malleable. And if you move into a corporate world with that thought that I am not going into a position of something that is fixed, in fact, I get a chance to shape my own journey and create my own environment and find a chance to play in my own way, then it doesn't matter where you're going. You're going to, you know, take that thought along with you. And that's exactly what I did. I went into a corporate bank and started to do ISEC stuff. I started to do things that I would do with people that in a bank would feel really weird to do. But they started to see value in it and said, wow, we are being more, we feel more connected with each other. We feel more like a team. We feel like we have more clarity of our goals. We feel like I want to come into work and work with this group of people. And so that was my experiment as well. Can I bring about the same sort of, you know, values and changes that I brought about in ISEC inside of a large corporation? So in some ways I'm saying, can I be the change agent that I've been talking about all this last, you know, 10 years in ISEC in another environment? And is it only limited to the environment? And I realized after a couple of years working in ING is that that's not true. In fact, there are people just like me in the bank as well. There are people like me who want to challenge the status quo that are in the bank, people that are creators and innovators and disruptors that are also working in the bank. And all of these guys in some weird way are also looking for people just like me to work with. And so, there are good people.
Yeah. And why do you think, because this is often common, like we had this conversation with certain friends, like you find people, they want to change, others, they want to change, but in each side is waiting for the other. What makes the difference for a first person to take the initiative?
Leadership.
Definitely. Yeah. As simple as that. In this journey of doing innovation, also, what were the, let's say, things that you learned in a corporate environment that non-corporate or non-for-profit did not teach you, and you felt like, oh, like this experience is actually more like rich than I ever thought?
A lot. In fact, what I knew while I was in a nonprofit was the tip of the iceberg. So because, you know, what I knew about innovation while I was in ISEC was so minute in comparison to the industry, in comparison to the information and knowledge that was out there. And the challenge with working for, you know, a purpose-driven organization or something that you're passionate about is that your passions sometimes tend to overpower the business sense that is needed to make your passion actually work in the world, in the market. And so what I learned in this last couple of years is, because I work in a bank, extremely risk averse, right? So what could you do to mitigate risk towards the journey that you truly want to live, or, you know, the journey that you want to go on? And there's a process to this. And so what I've been doing over the last 3 years is essentially being part of startup teams and coaching startup teams to go from idea to scale using a process, using the innovation, different innovation methodologies of design thinking and lean startup and agile scrum and a business model innovation. And so what these things do is help you structure the chaos. It gives clarity to the insanity of building something and being an entrepreneur. Everyone thinks, oh my God, where do I start? It tells you exactly where to start, what to do, what the next step should look like, and where to go from here. Mm-hmm. And that process that we applied to building startups and enterprises was where my biggest sort of learning was, which is where I found, in some ways, my kind of, call it whatever you want to call it, ikigai, call it the hedgehog, call it, you know, your spark, which is the cross section of entrepreneurship and innovation and people. Because everything that we use in business or for startups from a methodology point of view can very easily be applied to you yourself as your own enterprise. And that for me was big. And so I started to take all the, you know, design thinking steps, the lean startup steps, the experimentation mindset, and all of that, and apply to my work and my life. And that for me was my biggest sort of eye opener, which was, wow, I wouldn't have learned all of these things and one, got such an in-depth sort of knowledge about business if I was continuing to work in a nonprofit. I'm not saying that you don't get that in a nonprofit. The context was different. I had to really prioritize, you know, viability and feasibility of things and desirability of things before I even, you know, made my next step. So there was a lot of tedious and really a lot of effort put on, you know, follow the freaking process properly. Make sure you have the results. Make sure you have the evidence. Make sure you have the data to base your decisions on and not just your intentional thoughts or your passion that says, I'm going to do this now because I'm passionate about it. Because I believe this is it. Okay, show me how. How do you know? Where is the evidence? Who told you that? What data do you have? You know, what is the proof that you're going to be able to build this out or do this? That journey, that thing right there is hard to do, but it is what takes away the fear or the anxiety or this feeling of what if I fail out of the question.
Yeah, my question here regarding this point, because I get, so you're saying that in a nonprofit, we are more, people are more like, let's say, following their passion, like with the grits, etc. Mm-hmm. And in a corporate setting, you learned more like, let's say, data-driven decision-making and like following the process properly. And here, some people would suggest or wonder, will that mean that intuition when it comes to place and doing business and building ideas, will that corporate, let's say, learnings kill that intuition? Because a lot of people operate from an intuition place, right? And now there's like even like certain talks and studies about intuition and leadership and building businesses. What do you think regarding that?
About intuition, it's the concept everyone's talking about now, right? Yeah, I'm going to follow my intuition. Yeah, okay, mm-hmm. Cool. Do it. But, you know, your intuition doesn't work everywhere. The reason why you have good intuition is because you've been doing something for a while now, which has now become muscle memory in a way where you no longer need the time to be able to process information because it kind of just is part of you. Now, if you take someone who's really good at picking apples and now it can intuitively tell you which apples are good apples and bad apples, and you take them and now say, can you use your intuition to tell me which apple product in the market is going to work? It's not the same. Mm-hmm. That intuition over there doesn't work as much as if it was apples in the apple field versus apple as a product in the digital space.
Yeah.
So they need to spend the time to develop the intuition about this new space. When that happens by deliberate practice and, you know, doing something over and over again till you reach a point where now he or she can actually predict intuitively what outcomes are going to be. So intuition as a broad concept is great, but you need to understand that some people are more intuitive because they've done something over and over again in a specific field, which makes them that kind of person that can follow their intuition and have become really good at it. And they might not necessarily be able to be as good at something in a new market or a new place that they've never played in before.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go into a new space like a corporate life and you don't have any experience in that space and you haven't really practiced anything in that space, indeed, you're going to find it difficult. It's, like I said, you're going to be in the valley and you're going to learn a few things and you're going to find your way slowly climbing up to the top of the peak. And then as you reach your peak of your corporate life, you're going to look back and be intuitive in a corporate life because you've been through the process. Mm-hmm. You know now, you know, how to navigate through this intuitively, how to make decisions intuitively, because the experience that you've had is what's backing up your intuition.
Yeah. And does it make you more risk averse? If you, for example, if you later, as Niels, you, I don't know, after finishing your corporate experience, you decided to jump on building a business, an idea from scratch. So basically what you were teaching, you decided to start a practice as an entrepreneur. Do you think you will be that risk taker like you were, or this experience definitely it shaped you in a way? Mm-hmm. Is it a good or a bad? I don't know.
You know, there's a lot of misconceptions around what it means to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. The entrepreneur comes from a French word, which essentially means bearer of risk. And so while people see entrepreneurs as these ones who are not like, you know, don't worry about risk and, you know, follow their free will and, you know, go forth in the world and forge their path. In fact, it's the opposite. The best entrepreneurs are actually risk mitigators. The reason they're able to do what they do is because they've offset the risk involved around them to be able to go all in on one thing. Mm-hmm. So they've intentionally made sure that the path that they're going to follow has been de-risked so that they can go forward in their path. You look at Bill Gates, he didn't end up, quitting school until and unless he was sure that Microsoft was gonna, you know, he deferred from school. He didn't leave school. He deferred for a year to be able to see where this Microsoft thing is gonna go. Till he had enough evidence and proof that this was going to take off and then essentially let go.
This is not right? The story that is being told.
Yeah, you look at Steve Wozniak, right, who's the partner of Steve Jobs at the time, and he essentially still was working in HP while he was working with Steve Jobs on Apple, right? And he didn't quit his job, I think, at least 1 or 2 years until, you know, Apple kind of kicked off. So these are people who have mitigated risk. So they've looked at themselves and their situation and said, okay, what are the most risky situations I most likely will find myself in? How can I de-risk that situation so I can go all in on what I really care about? Mm-mm. And, you know, the way they do this is through this mindset of experimentation. And this mindset of experimentation is what, you know, I think more and more young people today need to be able to understand and embrace, because I find a lot of young people, and I've spent a lot of time with, you know, my generation and people like you and me, and we talk about our dreams and where we want to go, and that all is amazing, but how do you know you're going to get there? And how do you know that that indeed is your dream versus just the thought that you're having? A lot of the times, what we imagine for ourselves are a set of assumptions that we haven't tried and tested. And so we end up in a situation that we may like or may not like. And for example, you'd end up, say, imagine you worked in a nonprofit for like another 20 years, and then you just assume that you wanted to do that. But then you look back and you say, what am I doing with my life? And why am I still here? And I assumed that this was what I wanted, but then in reality, this was not actually what I enjoy. This is not what brings me alive. This is not what, you know, keeps me going. And then you look back and say, how could I have tested this assumption sooner, faster, in a smaller format, instead of have wasted 20 years of my life? And that is by deploying life experiments.
Yeah.
By taking everything from lean startup and saying, I'm going to build, measure, learn really quickly and build an MVP of the career that I want to go after and see if it works for me, and take the data from there. And the data in that sense doesn't necessarily hardcore data. It could be your feeling. It is giving you energy. It could be, are you enjoying yourself? Are you waking up every morning at 5 a.m. because you can't wait to go to work? Those are, you know, soft data that you can pay attention to and say, okay, how can I build an MVP of the career or the life I imagined and see if it works? And before you even get to that point, which is to figure out, you know, one step before that, going to what really works for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And I think, like you just explained, two important misconceptions is that first, even like in interviews, etc., I always hear that an entrepreneur is a risk taker. The best entrepreneurs are risk takers, but to adjust that he is or she is a risk mitigator, and that is a big difference. And then the mindset of experimentation. And I think now it's more common to say, like, I hear it in podcasts or in interviews as well. Like, before, again, people put a milestone for that, like before 30 years old, try as much as you can. Yeah. But I think there is no specific age to, what do you think about that? Is there like a specific age to experiment things, or you can experiment as long as it's, like you said, a process? I don't know.
There's no age to experiment things. Honestly, it depends on your context. Imagine if you want to experiment with rock climbing, but you're 80 years old. It's probably a bad time to experiment with rock climbing, right? Yeah. So, you know, you have to place everything within the context that you're in. Mm-hmm. But for me, no. I mean, you could still run an experiment with rock climbing when you're 80. You just know that the outcomes of success might not necessarily be as high as if it was when you were 20 or younger.
Yeah.
So you have to be a little realistic as well with, you know, what you're trying to go after. Mm-hmm. But if that's what you truly want, and if that is something that you can make money with, and if that's something that you know that you could be the best in the world for, or in some ways, you know, if that's what you feel and truly believe in your bones, that that's what you were made for, then do it.
Yeah. You shared recently on LinkedIn that you miss training startups again, that because that was what you were doing at the beginning. And since we talked about entrepreneurship and one misconception regarding risk mitigation, I'd love to listen more if you have more, let's say, misconceptions or common mistakes that people who start to build ideas from scratch face from your experience of training them.
Because I think that's the biggest learning over here is a lot of people start with their own idea. So I have an idea, and then I'm going to go build out this company for this idea. But that's actually that itself is a misconception. Your ideas are good, but honestly, everyone has ideas, and ideas are cheap and plenty. You know, you can come up with 100 ideas in the next 10 minutes, and so can the next person next to you. Maybe they'll come up with 80 instead of 100, and so can your mom and your dad, and so everyone in the world has ideas. And if your idea fails, then you're going to feel pretty shitty about yourself. And then, you know, you don't know what to do next because your idea failed. But instead of focusing on your idea or falling in love with your idea, and that's the pitfall, which is a lot of people fall in love with their ideas. Instead, you need to fall in love with the freaking problem. What problem are you solving, and for who, and what makes this problem worth solving?
Yeah.
If you can focus on who is your customer and what problems they have, then your idea doesn't matter as much as what problem that you're trying to solve for them. Because if you are passionate about solving a problem, and if your first idea fails, you will still be driven to wake up and go and find another idea to solve that problem.
Yeah.
So focus on solving problems that are worth solving instead of coming up with random ideas and trying to build a company around it and not realizing who it's for and what problems it's solving. At the end of the day, your idea is there to add value to someone or something. And if you're not able to identify that upfront, then you're going to be one of those entrepreneurs that failed. And in the world of entrepreneurship, there are more success stories. There are fewer success stories than failure stories. And the way to, you know, not be in that failure pool is to get the foundations right, the basics right, which is CPS. Who's your customer? What problem are you solving? And what is your solution? Based on those two things, not just based on what you like.
Yeah. You know, it's very funny how sometimes, like, the simplest things are the key to whatever we are facing, but we always ignore it, or we take that for granted. Like this, like CPS, for example, like it's like step number one, but we take it for granted. So we forget about it, but it's the essence, you know?
Yeah.
So that's very, it's life is simple.
It is really simple. In fact, it's harder to be simple than it is to be complex.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Awesome. Thanks, Neil, a lot. One question that I always ask for my guests, very last one, is what is the one perspective that you want to challenge people about? It can be in life, business, up to you.
Well, I don't know if it's as much of a perspective as much as it is like a thought, which is your darkest caves hold the brightest treasures. And this thought is about fear, right? A lot of people don't end up doing things that they want to do because they're too afraid of something, the outcome. What if they fail? What if people see them differently? What ifs? And the best way to sort of, you know, proceed in that situation is to say, what if I don't do that? You know, I've always said this a lot, is like, in 20 years, you regret the things that you didn't do more than things that you did. That's a Mark Twain quote, right? And so if you have a fear of something, I think that's really important to sit down and pay attention to it and try to understand where it's coming from. And then chart your path, which is, what is the smallest, most cautious step I can take towards that fear? Because I know on the other side of fear is my greatest treasure. Some people say, identify your passions, identify your life goals and whatnot. And for me, I'd say, identify what are your biggest fears, what scares you, what is it that you don't want to face, because it makes you feel something, and sit down with it and talk to it and understand it. Because when you understand it, you can fear less, and that will give you, you know, your path to the treasure that's been hiding behind that fear.
Beautiful. It reminded me of this podcaster, and also is a speaker, Tim Ferriss, that I really like. Yeah. And they also like explained about fears, that I found that very interesting. And we tend to, like you said, it's very interesting to not identify your passions, but identify your fears. They will tell you something about yourself. Thank you so much, Niels. That was a very nice perspective. It was very nice to have the conversation with you. I didn't feel the time going. And thank you so much.
Ines, thank you so much for having me. I truly enjoyed this. And yeah, I'm looking forward to staying connected and seeing what you're up to and what you're doing as you move forward here. And know that I am here if there's anything that I can support you with and, you know, give in this process that you're on.
Thank you.
What up, buddy? Hope the episode was beneficial for you. And here is my bonus news. So if you are someone who wants to build a business/startup and is at a very early stage, or you want to learn more about innovation methods and techniques to use at your workplace, or you want to change to get introduced to new ways of managing projects and building products in your organization, then Niels has already launched a website. It's called neilscasu.carbonmade.com. I will put the link in the description of the episode. You can go there and book him over a weekend and have the process with him, basically. So go check it out.